Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. Filling in, helpful hand here, Mr. Chris Buchanani. Chris, how we doing, sir?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, Jim. This is not the fall any of us were expecting to be having this year.
It really was not. And, well, let me, instead of me saying it, let me ask you, what just overall impressions, Iowa 25, Penn State 24.
Yeah, SOS, right?
Yes.
In many respects, although I will say that the team, I felt, looked more dialed in, more motivated than they have through much, arguably all of the season to this point. And I give Terry Smith a ton of credit. I don't want to be too effusive in my praise or aggressive in handing out plaudits for moral victories, because I don't buy into that, and I don't think we want to become a program that buys into that. The fact that we don't actually is exactly why we're here having this conversation. But circumstances do matter. And the situation into which Terry Smith was thrust, the coach being ousted midseason, a road trip to Iowa to play a tough Phil Parker coordinated defense in Kinnick Stadium at night while you're breaking in a new redshirt freshman quarterback amid all of that chaos, that is off the charts degree of difficulty. And again, taking that into consideration, the way in which he had that team ready to play on Saturday night, I think was pretty impressive.
You make a good point. It's funny. They talk about more in professional sports, in baseball, you have the closed door meeting or you change managers when your ace is going to pitch tomorrow against the worst team in the league.
Sure.
So this was not exactly that kind of atmosphere, as you pointed out. It's Iowa. It's at night. It's a tough place to play. And Penn State has a history of a young quarterback facing that Iowa defense at Kinnick Stadium and not being prepared. Let's start with the game plan overall. You mentioned, you know, that it felt like there was more spirit to the team, that they did play hard. I think I concur with that. I felt like there was an effort there.
Well, and to be clear, I didn't say they played hard. I said they played harder than they have through most, if not all, of the season. That's an important but subtle distinction.
Yes. It still didn't seem like they were playing like with their hair on fire. It wasn't that kind of effort. It was better.
Team, right? Isn't that obvious at this point that this is just a bad team? There's no other way to describe it. When have we seen them play well all year? Stretches of the Oregon game defensively. That's about it.
Well, that leads to the question. I do a show every week where we make picks in college football, and we're, you know, looking at teams throughout the country. And the question that we've been facing quite a bit is, at what point, how many games in, do you have to say to yourself that our expectation level for this team versus what they are? And by the way, that's not just a Penn State question. It's a Clemson question. It's a Florida State question. It's a Texas question. At what point do you say, all this talent coming back, everything in place, at what point is it replaced with, you know, it's six games in, it's seven games in, maybe what we're seeing is what we're going to get?
It's up probably right about now, I think. You know, that's just it, Jim. That at this point, I think we can look at both the starters and certainly the depth. Because when I talk about having to go on the road and start Ethan Gronkemeyer, redshirt freshman, and we can talk about the situation around Jackson Smolak and whether or not he ought to have ever been in the game, and now he's injured. That's the team you decided to roll with. You had the opportunity to make more changes, to restructure the roster more dramatically during the offseason, and you didn't. And this is the product on the field, and it is what it is. And going all the way back, Jim, to the non-conference schedule, we've not really seen an impressive performance from this football team. Not once. Not once. We're just still drafting off the fumes of 2024 to describe them as anything other than what the evidence of our eyes tells us they are, which is a bad football team.
What happened? And I ask that in the context, I realize Saturday night you had this redshirt freshman at quarterback and everything that comes along with that, especially on the road. I get that. But as you pointed out, this has been from game one, first quarter of the first game. They have not played well at all. What happened to that team, Chris, that last season played well late in the season, won a couple playoff games? Yes, I know. It was SMU and Boise State. I get it. But those weren't bad teams. Those were good teams.
Yep.
And this team manhandled them. They played Notre Dame, a team that, you know, obviously made it to the college football final game. And in many ways, they outplayed Notre Dame. Okay. They should not have lost that game. The offensive line dominated. The running backs played well. The running game was there. And now, a season later, yes, it's minus Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter, two really, really good players. But this is college football. Every year, you're going to lose your best players, and everybody else felt that same pain, okay? Probably more so than Penn State has. So what happened between all that talent coming back and today, where it's this is a not just a 3-4 team, this is a team that is 0-4 in the Big Ten.
Yeah, has not defeated a Power Four opponent halfway through the 2025 season. Yeah, boy, if I could definitively answer that, probably I'd be doing something other than being here on the air with you, Jim. But I one thing I really want to try to avoid is this notion that there is a silver bullet answer. What went wrong? It's probably a long list, and it probably has to do with the players, the coaching staff, the administrative personnel at Penn State. I thought it was striking that the James Franklin who showed up on college game day on Saturday morning, not less than a week removed from being the head coach from Penn State, looked more energized and relaxed and comfortable than I have seen him look at any point this season. And so part of my theory about why everything went sour in Happy Valley between James and the football program is that I think whether he realized it or not, and I suspect the answer was that he didn't, he was getting burned out on Penn State and being the head coach at Penn State and maybe being a head coach in general. And I think if that's the case, and, you know, there's all the stuff about the maneuvering and the failed attempt to secure a contract extension over the summer. And, you know, I'm not saying that that is determinative in what happened this season. But if you take all of those things together, 12 years is a long time to be in any job, frankly, these days. But certainly in a head coaching job in college football. And when you think about the stress that that kind of a pressure cooker gig puts on you over time, and then the particulars of how those things wore on James, you know, you talk about having to immediately go into overdrive when you get here to try to overcome the sanctions. And then you've got COVID thrown in there and you've got the can't win the big game stuff that just kind of have a force multiplier effect over time. Changing administrations and maybe some of his own shortcomings in his ability or lack thereof to navigate the political waters inside the university vis-a-vis getting everything he wanted from a support and money standpoint. All of that stuff starts to wear on you. And then here you are in what ought to be the crowning moment when you're about to finally crest the mountain. And that's when all of it just overcomes you, right? And you don't even realize it, but you've gotten over the course of months, I said on the obligatory podcast, maybe what, like 5% worse. You know, the old man used to say, you're getting better, you're getting worse. Or Kurt Cignetti say it too. R.I.P. Kurt Cignetti to Happy Valley. Very sad as an Italian man, but Italian American man. But you get 5% worse at the top and it trickles down. And nobody notices it and nobody realizes it, but they're all feeling their own pressures. They've all got their own distractions. And if the whole organization, top to bottom, is somewhere between 1% to 5% worse than it was last year, in a small margin of error business, that's all you need. So that's my working theory.
I hear you. And I'm going to play a little devil's advocate because I think what you're saying has a lot of merit. But I also think if you're the coach who, in James Franklin, has worked so hard to get everything in alignment, as he's talked about, and he's now in that position, or was a couple weeks ago, where he felt the AD was supportive, the president, the board, getting the big money for the stadium. They obviously had to have money to get all these players to return, okay? You don't get a Singleton, Catron Allen, Denai Dennis Sutton, Drew Aller returning without paying them, okay? So that it seemed like instead of being burned out, if there was ever a time he should have felt reinvigorated, because the work that he had done in his mind to put all of that in place was finally actually in place. This was it. This was his opportunity. So I understand the potential for burnout, but I'm also thinking, you know what? We've all had jobs where, you know, something good happens, it gets you re-engaged. I would have thought that happened for James. Chris, that's it for quarter one. When we come back, I want to talk to you more about James's interview when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. Chris, before we get going, I want to talk to you about James's interview on Saturday. Just tell our listeners where they can find you and the obligatory podcast.
Sure. Oh, I appreciate that, Jim. Thanks. So you can find the obligatory PSU pregame show in probably in the midst of its 10th season. Still shocking to me. On the YouTube channel of For the Bloggy. So you can find us there. We film it every week at Happy Valley Live here at 1301 East College Ave in State College, the Penn Statiest place on earth. It's me, Mike the Mailman, my co-host Kevin Horn, and Brandon Noble and Landon Tengwall bringing the Penn State Letterman's perspective. Lots of fun, and the podcast is kind of an extension of that, so you can get that wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe you're listening to this podcast in that same source, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff.
Very good. Make sure you check it out. Lots of fun stuff. By the way, Chris, just we're talking about James Franklin, dozen years at Penn State, and sometimes you get burned out. 10 years with the obligatory podcast. Not burned out yet, though, are you?
No, I've been burned out for years, Jim. That's my secret. It's kind of like Bruce Banner says in The Avengers, that's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry. This is my secret. I'm always burned out with that show and those guys.
So that's the new level. All right. I was going to get to the James Franklin interview later, but now that we brought him up, let's hit that a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
I loved watching the reaction to it, because anyone who was surprised that James came across well, calm, cool, collected, with good answers to the questions that you knew were coming, anyone who was surprised by that, you don't know James Franklin. Mm-hmm. He does not go in unprepared. He had his talking points set. What I find intriguing, Chris, is the reaction to it. And boy, I saw both extremes. I got that's James. Sure, he's good at these answers. They're canned answers. It's the same thing. You know, we had, I don't know if you saw social media, someone had the bingo card on things he would say. And then you have those fans from other schools, whether they were Wisconsin fans, Auburn fans, Florida fans, sign him up right now. That's my guy. That's my coach. So what do you think is the reality of that interview?
Look, it's like everything else with James, Jim. The reality is both. That's the frustrating thing. And that's, you know, to the extent that he got sick of us over 12 years, that effect, that's why we got sick of him. I mean, I keep going back to this Andy Reid in Philly analogy. And I swear it's not because I'm an Eagles fan, except maybe to the point that I'm able to see how apt the comparison is. And one of the issues with Andy Reid when he was in Philadelphia, and make no mistake, you know, the guy had to leave and go somewhere else and learn the lessons that came through that to be where he is today. That and drafting Patrick Mahomes, of course. But he's a great coach, and I think James Franklin is a very good coach. But Andy Reid was the main reason the Eagles got to 5 NFC championship games. He was also the main reason they lost 4 of them and never won a Super Bowl while he was there. And that's it. So you can look at it from either perspective, and your opinion is valid. And that's what makes it frustrating. That's what maybe does contribute to erosion in both directions over time, of confidence and affection for one another. And unfortunately, that's why, especially on social media, the two most vocal elements of this fan base are just going to continue to clobber each other in the most pointless, frustrating, senseless way imaginable.
You know, you brought up the Andy Reid analogy to me, and I wasn't sure I was buying into it. I'm now buying it. And it's fascinating when I said the different reactions I saw. The negative reactions were all local media, local reaction, the people who have seen those same answers, obviously, for the last dozen years, versus those who it's all new. This is James, polished, professional looking, professional sounding, all the right answers. And you have a Nick Saban sitting there defending him to the hilt. Candidly, Chris, I thought that was the biggest newsworthy item of the interview. Was Nick Saban coming right out and essentially saying, they done you wrong, James?
I think the most newsworthy item coming out of that interview is information that can be gleaned with a simple Google search, Jim. And that's a commonality linking James Franklin, Nick Saban, Kirk Herbstreit. And as we sit here recording this morning, I have not looked at the other members of the panel, but the bare minimum, those three guys, and you saw Joey Galloway and Kirk Herbstreit release a video earlier last week about all the meanie Penn State fans just ran poor old James Franklin out of Happy Valley and he walked on water his entire way out. Do you know what the link between all those individuals I just named is?
What's that?
Jimmy Sexton, Creative Artists Agency. So that's the biggest takeaway. The biggest takeaway is that that whole thing was a staged sham, totally bereft of any kind of journalistic integrity. And again, to be fair, let me make the point as crystal clear as I can. If you come to ESPN or College Game Day or really any mainstream media outlet now expecting journalistic integrity and you walk away disappointed, that's actually your fault, not theirs at this point. But that whole thing was just a dog and pony show, and it was clearly designed for one reason and one reason alone: to rehab the image of one of the most valuable assets of a talent agency, which both the subject of the interview and the interviewers share a common stake.
Wow, I didn't realize that they all had Sexton as their agent.
Well, it's all CAA.
Yes, that is
a commonality linking all of them. And so, yeah, why was James made out to be God's gift to the sport of college football by the same network that had turned him into a total clown and national punchline over the course of the preceding decade? Probably because the conditions on the ground change. And I guarantee you, the first time he loses at home to Kentucky or whatever at his next stop, the Bombay doors are going to open right back up.
Where's the best fit for him?
In my opinion, this is not where I think he's going to go. In fact, I think there's an almost zero chance. I think the absolute best fit for James, other than maybe going back to Vanderbilt if Clark Lee leaves, but I don't know that he's going to. He's at his alma mater. I think he's Stanford. Now, he said in no uncertain terms he wants to go somewhere where he can win a national championship. It'll be hard to win a national championship at Stanford. He can make the playoffs there because the ACC, as we're seeing this year, is wide open. And two different coaches have shown you can win big at Stanford this century. I mean, it's not they're not a decades long doormat or anything. I think that James, for all of his flaws, and we all got them, and he has many, I do think he is genuine when he talks about his ideal of college football as a transformational versus transactional experience. In part, honestly, I think that's maybe why he got a little burnt out. Because I don't think he loves the way the game has changed. And I think that Stanford is a place where you can realistically pursue that. There are a lot of resources that will be available there. I think that the fan base, to the extent that it exists, which is really not at all, will not put the pressure on him the way a fan base in an SEC school would, or certainly experienced here at Penn State and didn't care for. And, you know, again, the ACC is a conference where I think he could get talent out there in California. And I look at a lot of different reasons why I think he'd be a good fit. I think they'd like him there. I think Palo Alto is a community where Stanford football is less than an afterthought. And so he could be a celebrity when he wanted to be and anonymous the rest of the time. It just seems like a place where the guy could go flourish, give them what they want, which is to get back to the Harbaugh, Jim Shaw level of competition. And he could get what he wants, which is to actually try to create a transformational college experience for the players on his roster, to have a lot of money at his disposal, to have a chance to go to the playoffs, and to be left alone by the people in the place where he lives.
It's an eloquent discussion. Great points that you make, that it would be a great fit, but I'm with you. I don't believe he would go there. because
he's going to go to like Florida State, probably. Florida State, I think, is the best of the quote unquote big jobs for him to fit. Because I know Florida, and they talk about LSU and Auburn, maybe. I just don't understand how somebody who was driven to distraction by Penn State's fans is going to go to an SEC school and not live in perpetual misery.
Well, I think the problem is I don't think James looks at it that way. I think he'll look at it like Penn State didn't know how good they had it with me. I'm going to go show that I can win. And I think a place like Auburn, Florida, Florida State, they'll come up to him and say, what do you need? What do you need? Arkansas, you know, I keep using the analogy, you know, John Calipari leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas in college hoops. And Arkansas committed to him, we'll give you whatever you need financially.
Sure.
I just picture that kind of reaction from one of those schools, like an Auburn, Arkansas, A&M Florida.
Told Jimbo Fisher the exact same thing. And right now we're in the la honeymoon period where I'm going to go on College Game Day and I'm going to get nothing but softball questions. And eventually that ends. And eventually the coach with the same failings and shortcomings that he had at Penn State is going to be at another place. And the moment they start to manifest themselves, the local press and the fan base will have the pitchforks out. And then all of a sudden, the whole cycle will begin again.
And we've seen it over and over again. You mentioned Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M. How about Kelly at LSU, Napier at Florida, Norvell at Florida State? They're all dealing with that. Perhaps that's the inevitability of being a college football coach. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter two. When we come back, we're going to talk about the actual Iowa game. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. All right, Chris, let's get back to this Iowa football game. Let's start with the quarterback, Ethan Grunkmeyer. First start. It's on the road. It's at a hostile place like Iowa. How'd he do?
Okay, I guess. I mean, not very good. Not very good at all, but you've got to grade him on somewhat of a curve. I mean, for God's sakes, Jim, the situation into which he and Terry Smith have found themselves thrown, you hear when Terry says that in his head they're kind of linked together, that they're going through the experience together. I think that's true. I mean, Grunk did not look comfortable out there, nor did he look especially sharp. But he made some nice plays and I think really did enough to put Penn State in position to shock the world, as Terry said that we could, and win the game. And, the defense's job containing Gronowski is just inexcusable. Just inexcusable garbage performance from the defense. So, Gronk, I don't know that I came away thinking that's the quarterback of the future for Penn State. But I also don't look at him as the reason you lost the game. You have to have reasonable expectations for a guy in that situation facing that kind of a defense. And more or less, I think he did enough, which is not, you know, not a whole lot, but enough to put them in position to win.
I'm not quite as forgiving for this. Was not the true freshman first game. He's been in the system now a couple years. He arrived early a year ago, went through multiple spring practices, multiple fall camps. My question, though, is how do you feel that the coaches, or specifically the coordinator, how good a job did they do to put him in a position to succeed?
Lousy. Lousy. Of course, Jim. I mean, I didn't say it before, but a big part of the equation here is the receivers can't get open. Trevor Peña's, you know, got a king's ransom to come to Penn State, and when you need him to hold on to a football in the end zone the most, he can't. These guys aren't making plays. Kobe Howard finally gets in the game. I wasn't even sure he was a real person until Saturday night. He gets in the game, makes a play, and then promptly disappears for the rest of the contest. So we can watch these same guys who haven't gotten the job done for 6 weeks not get the job done again. So, yeah, a personnel scheme. Thankfully, Catron Allen, God bless that kid. You talk about the heart of a Nittany Lion. He got more run, and you saw what that looked like. But the two quarterback package with switching out Gronk and Smolik, I mean, that was just insanity. Andy Kotelnicki should probably be put in prison for that addition to the offense. Think about, Jim, the precious practice reps that were vultured away from Ethan Grunkemeyer so they could install that package this week.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all. If one of your arguments is that Grunkemeyer is more mobile than what we've seen with Drew Aller, why do we need to bring in this other quarterback, I'm assuming, for his mobility, because we never saw him throw the ball? Which leads to my other question with Smolik. If you're going to bring him in the number of times you did, you may as well just, you know, hold up a banner that says, we're going to run on this play, right? How many plays was he in there? How many times did he throw the ball? Shouldn't the job of the coordinator be to set something up, okay? We'll lull you into thinking that Smolik is only going to run the ball. Then we're going to surprise you with a play action pass or something. But if that never happens, What was the point there? Who was it? Tommy Stevens came in and ran the ball himself 17 consecutive times. At what point does the defense say, you know what? I don't think he's coming in to throw the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's been a persistent issue. Will Levis, Tommy Stevens. I mean, now Jackson Smolik, who is not the mobile run threat that either of those two other guys I just mentioned were. I don't know. I'm just at a complete loss. That was just foolishness. And not for nothing, you've only got two scholarship quarterbacks available to you now for the remainder of the season. And so you do run the risk of getting Smolik dinged up, which happened. And so the risk return calculation on that package is just, I have no words for it. I have no words for it. It was just foolish. And here we are.
Three and four
with one healthy scholarship quarterback.
With the way the game transpired, and going back to Grunkemeyer, my issue, when you have a young quarterback like that you're throwing out there for the first time, Chris, is you have two choices. You can try to protect him or you let him go. Mm-hmm. I think the problem when you try to protect him, we've got to establish the run. The problem is, if you pretty much announce that's what you're going to do, you force this young kid into the tougher situation, which is third and long, where he has to pass the ball, as opposed to, it's always my feeling, Chris, and I've said this over and over again, I know Keystone Kickoff listeners are tired of hearing it, but Bill Walsh said it to, that was the first guy I heard say it. You want to pass the ball, you want to do it the easiest way, throw the ball on first down. Okay, that's the best opportunity you will give your quarterback, especially when, and it never felt like they were doing anything unpredictable, that they'd say, hey, they probably expect Catron Allen here. Let's use this opportunity to let Ethan Grunkmeyer throw the ball. The other thing is, it seemed like they were so afraid to let him throw the ball. All they were doing, the dinking and dunking, and please don't tell me about, gee, he threw it over the top several times. Well, as we learned in the ball that was picked off, essentially it's as good or better than a punt, okay? I don't think that's being daring, throwing the ball over the top, Chris.
Well, nevertheless, we've not seen it in previous weeks. We did take a deep shot to Devontae Ross on first down, which I was happy to see. I mean, baby steps here. Anybody who came out of that game and wants to beat up the job Terry Smith did just needs to pause and take a deep breath. When you consider the amount of time he had to come in and say, okay, what are all the things that are going wrong? And it was a long list so far this season. Let's start tweaking them in the, you know, 20 hours of practice we have between now and the game. While, oh, by the way, also, like, all the kids on the roster are pissed off because the coach got fired and there's all this turmoil and I'm calling recruits to try to keep them from decommitting. There were signs of improvement, but again, Andy Kotelnicki and Jim Knowles are getting paid a lot of money. You ought to be able to put some of that onto them and say, hey guys, you know, how about instead of me coming in here while I have all this other stuff on my plate, telling you what you've been doing wrong as you collect your millions of dollars all season, why don't you do a little self-scouting and you figure it out and you let me lean on you to do the jobs you were brought here to do and do them well. And both of them, big surprise at this point in the season, came up short.
That's it exactly, Chris. And we'll get to the defense in Jim Knowles, but let's stick with Andy Kotelnicki. This was the guy who was supposed to be that genius, who creative, all those things. What did you see creative?
The one play I really did like a lot that worked well was the where they faked the like sweep handoff to Nick Singleton. And then let Catron Allen run it up the middle. Yeah. I thought that it was nice. That was a nice, fun play. That stupid play they tried on fourth down that was executed so slowly that I think a Pop Warner defense could have picked it up, where they did the direct snap to Luke Reynolds, who is not Tyler Warren or anything close, like not even close. So do you use him that way? Again, at this point in the season, if you don't see that the guy's not Tyler Warren, I don't know what to tell you. That was foolishness. There's some creativity here, but it's just a case of the guy seems incapable of adapting his system to the personnel at his disposal, and the personnel he has to work with this season do not fit his system.
As long as we're playing the what happened to Nick Singleton? Is that Nick Singleton forgot how to run the ball? Or are they just not using him properly?
At this point, my best guess, Jim, is that it's probably psychological. It's kind of a, you know, when a guy gets the yips type of a deal, you see it in sports every once in a while. And it's almost inexplicable because you saw the guy excel at such a level. And then a switch flips and it's like he can't do anything right. I don't know that he has been used throughout the season in a way that puts him in the best position to succeed. But it's just not the same guy out there this year. It's not. I don't know. I've got no answer. I'm sorry. You got nothing.
Well, the only thing I could put, and I'm going to put it on the coordinator, who, again, is supposed to be creative, and you have a guy here who I think we could agree is a very talented running back, and it seems like you can't find any way to get that out of him.
And it's possible he was overcoached by Stan Drayton. That happens. A guy comes in and says, man, look at how great he is as an unpolished athlete. What if I can teach him all the right things to think and do? Then imagine how great he'll be. And some guys aren't wired up that way. You just have to let them be more instinctive and take a hands-off approach. I've heard that theory, and certainly we've seen that elsewhere in sports too, the overcoaching, and then they start overthinking, and you're trying to technically tweak their game, and you inadvertently make it worse. I think that's worthy of consideration.
I think, like any other tough questions, there's probably multiple pieces to it. All right, Chris, when we come back, I want to ask you about the defense, but we're just one last aspect on offense. Let's talk offensive line when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Rebel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Rebel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to RebelXP.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris Buccinati. I'm Jim Galati. We are talking about this Penn State-Iowa game. Let me give you one piece of good news, Chris. If you wagered on the Nittany Lions on Saturday night, guess what? You won. They covered the spread.
Awesome.
Hey, I'm stretching to find something here, buddy.
I mean, this is just a disaster. A disaster. Maybe one of the most disastrous seasons in the history of Penn State football.
It really is when you consider the level of expectation. And, Chris, I don't think that level of expectation was unfair.
No, not at all.
They were bringing all this talent back, and we talked in terms of this, can we interpret this at all as a moral victory? And my answer, no, you can't. You're missing your starting quarterback, yes, but you have much more talent than Iowa does. You across the board. You just plain you do. So to me, I'm not taking that excuse. They underperformed all season, including in this game. And speaking of underperforming, the offensive line, that was supposed to be the base. That was the starting point, Chris. Again, I'll ask you the question that you probably don't have an answer to. But what's going on there? There was 4 out of 5 guys coming back, 7 out of the top 8. I know Vega was out for this game, but it wasn't just this game. It's been all season long. When you talk Nick Singleton underperforming, how much of that can you lay on the offensive line also?
Yeah, and when you look at Catron Allen's running style, he rarely goes down with first contact. So if you're not giving him big gaping holes, it's not as much of an issue as, hit the hole and turn on the Jets type runner like Nick Singleton. I don't know, Jim. I mean, it was kind of an emotional experience watching that game, and I've not gone back and rewatched it yet. But my sense of it was that the O-line, actually, when you consider the fact that they were playing Donko and Shanahan at the two guard spots, I didn't think had a terrible night. At times, Gronk had a fair amount of time to throw. Not always, but again, some of that credit needs to go to the Iowa defense. Great. They've got a great defensive coordinator, and they got a great personnel and a very good home field advantage. I don't know that I looked at last night's game and pinned too much of it on the offensive line, and that has been the case in previous outings this season. But yeah, it's just the same story. One position group after another, one coach after another. It's just everywhere. What you saw last year and what you projected into this year based on it just hasn't matched up, not even close.
No, it has not been. And I put a lot of it, Chris, on the coordinators. I haven't been happy with Andy Kotelnicki, with Kotelnicki's performance. Haven't seen it on the offensive side. And on the defensive side, Jim Knowles, this was a guy – And I don't want this. This is not the 2020 hindsight. I said it when it first happened. I was always concerned about Jim Knowles coming in. That, you know, this is that last job, that last paycheck kind of deal.
Yeah. Okay. Walmart greeter job. This is clearly his Walmart greeter job.
Yes, that concern. It's like when I get people now saying with the head coach, they want Urban Meyer or they want Nick Saban. I'm like, don't give me the last, you know, Nick Saban. Get me the next one, okay? Because we can see as these guys, hey, we're seeing it with Dabo Sweeney, okay? Just because he won 5 years ago and 10 years ago doesn't mean he's going to win today. Get me the next one. And I felt that way about the Jim Knowles hire. But again, I was told by people who are smarter than me that, hey, this is the best defensive coordinator in the country. And is he? Have you seen anything to indicate that, Chris? And I especially, my issue, and you alluded to it a little bit, you know, this is a quarterback, Gronkowski, who's coming off an injury, all of that. This was his career high in rushing, and it wasn't just – oh, they kept feeding him the ball. They were major hits, just like we saw with Nico in UCLA. You know, you have the team down. It's third and long. You have the quarterback with nobody open, nowhere to go, and they take off for 50, 60 yards, Chris. What is going on with Jim Knowles?
I don't know, man. That defensive effort was just trash, just pathetic. When I think about what it would have meant to the program and the fan base and to the guys in that locker room and the coaches on staff for them to win that game, to waste what could have been a moment that became part of Penn State football mythology, that blocked field goal return for a touchdown, because you can't contain Rob Gronkowski as a run threat. It's just disgusting. I don't know. I've got no way. I mean, I don't know. I didn't sit and like break down tape. I don't know what the problem is with this defense other than they suck. And for $3 million, you ought to have a little bit better result. Now, don't give me this. His system takes 3 years to install stuff. I mean, I don't think it takes 3 years to figure out how to stop a guy on a bum leg from consistently going 70 plus on you, right?
That's the point, Chris. These are, and by the way, if you got to wait 3 years to learn the defense, all these guys will be gone.
not a great hire for a championship or bust season. And I will admit, I got totally suckered into the bidding war like a lot of other folks did, because I thought Penn State was close based on last season. And when you saw all of those players committing and saying they were going to come back, it just felt, Jim, so much like 2023 Michigan, 2024 Ohio State, where in the offseason you had guys who were buying into what it meant to be at the program they were at and what it meant to take pride in your work and pride in the opportunity to call yourself a champion potentially at the end of the season. That, yeah, I understand they're getting paid. Everybody's getting paid. That they were willing to come back and take one more swing at this thing, I thought, let's go right at the king. Let's go right at the king. Let's try to rip something from right out of the heart of that operation that Ryan Day has built. And let's show that we are preparing to deserve to walk on the field with Ohio State in the fall by illustrating that we can compete directly with them in the offseason. I bought into all of that hook, line, and sinker. And now Ryan Day is laughing at us because he got Matt Patricia, who is a total buffoon, and somehow that defense is humming like they haven't missed a beat. I don't know. There's voodoo magic at work in Columbus. That's my only explanation.
Well, then that leads to this, Chris. All right, how about looking forward? You're Pat Kraft. You could give me names if you want, but you're in Pat Kraft's shoes. What are you looking for now? Now, I think one of the first decisions that has to be made is this locker room just so done that you want to sweep everything away, or do you want to go that halfway? My point being, do you bring in a Manny Diaz who might keep some of this staff, or do you just say, you know what, we're starting from scratch? What are you looking for? Are you looking for the biggest name?
More and more like we should start from scratch, right? In terms of keeping the roster, how much would you want to keep, really? I mean, there's not going to be an opportunity to bring most of this roster back next year, in part because guys are out of eligibility. And also, just be prepared. When James gets his next job, wherever it is, he's going to take several of the coaches and a lot of the players with him. And so if you're asking me, do I believe it would be better to have mostly a hard reset? The answer is yes, I think that's right. But what I'm telling you is whether it's right or wrong, that's what's going to be facing Penn State till we get around the next season.
Well, then where's the way to go for that new coach? Is my fear, and I said this from the start, was that Pat Kraft has put himself in the position where does he need to get a big name here? Because if he gets anything less than a big name, it'll look like he failed. Okay.
Well, we learn a lesson from the conversation we had moments ago. That was the logic many of us, and again, I'll include myself, got sucked into with the defensive coordinator search when Tom Allen left. We got to get the big name. We got to win the news cycle. We got to win the press conference. All of that stuff is great until you start playing football games, and if you don't win on the field, nobody remembers or cares that you won the press conference. So I'm not worried about a big name or a splash hire. I'm worried about the right guy. That's it, period.
Well, that's my point too here, Chris, that it's about the right guy. And if you look around, who was Ryan Day prior to becoming head coach at Ohio State? Sure. You're talking about that program humming. Who was Dabo Sweeney before he got to Clemson and they became, Clemson for a decade? Did Nick Saban wrap himself in glory at Michigan State before he took Alabama where they went?
Which is one of the reasons why I don't worry too much about, everything didn't work out great for Manny at Miami. I don't want to get into individual coaching candidates, but you and I both like Manny as a candidate. And I just hear the Miami thing brought up a lot. And I'm like, okay, guys, well, then, LSU never should have hired Nick Saban because he didn't win a national championship at Michigan State.
Right. That's my point. It's about getting the right guy, not necessarily the biggest name. And that's what I want to see. We're not going to be in that room interviewing, what I know of Manny Diaz, I like. I think when we saw him here as a defensive coordinator, time after time, I saw things and I said, hey, that's the scheme. That's the coordinator making that happen. That's what I want to see in our next head coach here. All right, Chris, hey, thank you for coming in today. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.